Welcome back. This is Chicken Philosophy, The Secret of the Golden Flower, Part 2, in which I will continue reading probably mostly like in the introduction stuff to The Secret of the Golden Flower. And, eventually I don't know. Well, we'll see how it goes. We might actually get to the beginning of the actual text today. Looks like. I think that for today, I don't know. I mean, for those who don't know, I live in Goa, India, and there's a thing. And someone explained it to me once. I think trance started here. Or something as like a music style, or it initially got started, like the primordial ooze of it got started in San Francisco, and then something to do with the Cacophony Society. I am in total ignorance. Someone explained it to me once. There was a branching where one branch went this way and became Burning Man, and another branch went this way and went to Goa in the 80s. Early 80s or something. And then that's where trance comes from. And I got into trance when I was a teenager in the 90s. I mean, got into. I heard a bit of it. I got, you know, we'd do a little bit of that and listen to it and be like, ah, this is cool. But I wasn't, like, into it. I wasn't, like, going to places where they play it or anything. But I had The Secret Life of Trance Volume 2 or 3 or something. So I just did a bit of quick Googling to see what would be easy for me to, you know, use for the background for this. And I found something called Goa Trance Volume 3. And assuming that it's not blocked by copyright, you'll be hearing that now. It just seemed appropriate. I don't know why. It seemed like the thing to play today. I play various things in the background here. Oh, by the way, The Secret of the Golden Flower. It's not exactly golden, but it is shaped like a flower. And also, of course, this is the subtitle is A Chinese Book of Life. This was originally written in Chinese. And I've got a little bit of a Chinese connection. I know I don't look like it. But neither did my grandpa. Here's his some kind of ID thing. See, there's my grandpa and a bunch of Chinese stuff written around it. I don't know if this was like a passport or what. See, there's like stamps and something, some kind of ID he had. That's Dan Cleveland Reeb. I'm the last of the Reebs. Interesting, huh? And not planning on... I'm planning to be the last of the Reebs. I'm making a conscious decision to be the last person with that last name. Other people have that last name, but they're not descended from this guy's like great-grandfather. So it's like... Anyway, this was my grandpa's driver's license for... the French Quarter of Shanghai. So he was there for about 20 years. My dad was born in China. And he was the youngest refugee aboard the Coolidge. Here's a picture of that. My dad was on the cover of the newspaper. Because when the Japanese started getting ornery, when things started getting tense between Japan and America, the Americans got out of China, basically. And he was the youngest, apparently. Or at least at that moment. And, yeah, but he always was very proud of the fact that he was born in China. That kind of formed part of his core identity as a young man and kind of stayed that way for his whole life. And that definitely influenced me. And probably has a lot to do with the fact that I now live in India. Not that China and India have... that much in common, other than, of course, Buddhism. I'll get to the reading. Enough talking, Edward. Translator's note on the new revised edition. 30 years have passed since the appearance of the first English edition of The Secret of the Golden Flower. A second world war has been fought, and a third world war looms as a possibility. Well, I'm curious about when this was written. I mean, this introduction. 1961. Okay, they're like ready for World War III. So yeah, what we've been reading so far makes reference to the Great War. You know, China could look at the English-speaking world or the Western world and say, well, what about the World War, the Great War? Yeah, because it was only one. But now I say, yeah, that was written a long time ago. We had another World War since then. And the third one's right around the corner. Anyway, man expends his energy upon the outer world without let or hindrance. In the midst of this extroversion, the continent of the spirit recedes on the horizon. Does it still exist? The new edition of this book is an affirmative answer. Yes. It reminds us that man never really loses his vision of the continent of the spirit, in quotes. That must be a reference to something in this book that we haven't gotten to yet. Right. And that the conquest of, quote, inner space, end quote, the understanding of the psyche will remain the ultimate human goal. C.G. Jung. Just kidding. Carl Jung. You know him, right? This guy. Pointing both to these books and to that link that just popped up there. Whose work was given wholly to that goal, died in 1961. Oh, that was when this introduction was written. Okay. Readers of this new edition will see in it a memorial to him as co-author of the book. Now, I'm just reflecting on the fact, because my mom had kind of a special place for Jung in her heart, and she had stories that my grandpa had told her about Jung, or about his experience with Jungian work that I talked about in the first episode of that Black Books playlist. So she would have been 16. She was born in 45. So she would have been 16 when Jung died. And so my grandpa probably... That probably triggered a lot of him communicating about Jung. Anyway, all right. So now we're on to another section. To the fifth German edition of The Secrets of the Golden Flower, several pages from another Chinese text on yoga closely related to that of the Golden Flower have been added. It is the Hui Meng Qing, or Book of Consciousness and Life. This new material now appears for the first time in English, and with it an introductory note by Salome Wilhelm. Contains Salome. Those watching the Carl Jung will know what I'm talking about. Or if you've read the New Testament, but a specific take on that character. Anyway, containing a brief but important comment by her husband on the Hui Meng Qing. Another piece of new material appearing in English for the first time is Jung's foreword to the second German edition. Revision has brought about some radical changes in terminology in this edition. On the advice of Helmut, any fans of 1990s, was that 90s? Mike Myers on SNL, Helmut. Specifically. Anyway, sorry, different time. Helmut Wilhelm Hessing with an H and an S, which was translated as, quote, essence, end quote, or Wesson, not like the oil, but has been changed to essence of human nature, from essence to essence of human nature. Ah, okay. Glad we're getting the better version. Or briefly, human nature. Sing, very often coordinated with Ming, life, like the latter, is a cosmic principle. It is, of course, startling to the Western reader to think of human nature in those terms. But the idea is fundamental to Chinese philosophy. In which terms? Ming and Hsing? Is it startling? I mean, it's another language. I'll just keep reading. I think their idea of a Western reader isn't exactly the same demographic that I fall into, always, necessarily. Maybe there's some overlap, a little Vesica Pisces somewhere. Okie doke. A third world principle. What? A third, really? A third world principle. So neither American capitalist, you know, trading, nor Russian communist trading, but neutral and or just abstaining from either of these two systems. That's what we're talking about, the third world, right? Like India? Okay. Okay, where are we? Where were we? Who are we? What are we doing? A third world principle, Hui, has, I mean, maybe it's a world principle. The third world principle. So a world principle, Hsing, a world principle, Ming. And then another world principle, which since we're listing world principles, it's the third world principle. Nothing to do with the third world. I think that I'm onto something. Ignore everything I said about communism and capitalism. Okie dokie. Hui has any fans of God Emperor of Dune? Hui has importance in the new edition because of the Hui Ming Qing. Hui consciousness is related to Hsing, human nature. I know I'm not pronouncing anything correctly, so just bear with me, but is not identical with it. A link in common is that both are opposites of Ming, life, but they are separate concepts in Chinese thought. Okay, so Hui is consciousness, Hsing is human essence or human nature, and Ming is life, which is the opposite of consciousness and human nature. All right, I admit that's a little, what? You know, like, okay, we'll get used to it, I think, over time. We'll contemplate that one, meditate on it, shall we? Another important change in the translation, also made at the insistence of Helmut Wilhelm, is the substitution of energy for force. Kraft, with a capital K, as in Kraftwerk. Backward flowing energy is an example of kraft, or not force, but energy. Okay. The translation has been made because they made Star Wars inspired by this, and then they were like, just call it energy. Maybe not. The translation has been carefully revised and checked for possible inaccuracies. Helmut Wilhelm's assistance in the revision of the part of the book written by his father has led to many improvements besides those mentioned above. I am also indebted to him for the material in a number of new footnotes. Initialed by him. And for the statements concerning the relationship of Hsing, Ming, and Hui. Okay. I wonder if I should say Sing instead of Hsing. I mean, I'm saying Hsing because it's spelled H-S-I-N-G, so I feel like that's better than saying Sing. Hsing, Ming, and Hui. That's what I'm going to say. Sorry, you know, but just so you know what that's what is going to happen. My daughter, Exemina de Angulo, has given me indispensable aid with respect to the revision of the book as a whole. Carrie F. Baines. Let me get this straight. Carrie F. Baines has a daughter named Exemina de Angulo. Okay, so she married a guy named de Angulo. But Exemina? All right. I guess if you have a name like Carrie, you might be like, I'm not going to name my daughter something simple. Morris, Connecticut, 1961. Okay. Now seems like a good enough a time as any for a sip of coffee. So here we've got the four-pointed Dorje, or Vajra. Vajra is Sanskrit, Dorje is Tibetan, Kangoko is Japanese, and the yin and yang, from Taoism. You got a little Taoism in your Tibetan Buddhism. Me too. Don't we all? Forward to the German edition. My deceased friend Richard Wilhelm. We're reading the words of Carl Jung now. Just so you know. My deceased friend Richard Wilhelm, the co-author of this book, sent me the text of The Secret of the Golden Flower at a time that was critical for my own work. I had been occupied with the investigation of the process of the collective unconscious since the year 1913. And had obtained results that seemed to me questionable in more than one respect. They not only lay far beyond everything known to academic, in quotes, psychology, but also overstepped the borders of medical, strictly personal psychology. These findings had to do with an extensive phenomenology. Not quite. Bless you. To which hitherto known categories and methods could no longer be applied. My results, based on 15 years of effort, seemed inconclusive because no possible comparison offered itself. I knew of no realm of human experience with which I might have backed up my findings with some degree of assurance. The only analogies, and these I must say were far removed in time, I found scattered through the reports of heresiologists. This connection did not in any way ease my task. On the contrary, it made it more difficult, because the Gnostic systems consist only in small part of immediate psychic experiences, the greater part being speculative and systematizing revisions. Since we possess only very few detailed texts, and since most of what is known comes from the reports of Christian opponents, we have, to say the least, an inadequate knowledge of the history as well as of the contents of this confused and strange literature, so difficult to encompass. Moreover, considering the fact that a period of not less than from 1700 to 1800 years separates the present from the past, support from that field, from a specific point in the past, seemed to me extraordinarily risky. Again, the connections were in part of a secondary character and left gaps in the main issue. Oh, Gnostic, right. An issue which made it impossible for me to make use of the Gnostic material. The text that Wilhelm sent me helped me out of this embarrassment. It contained exactly those pieces which I had sought for in vain among the Gnostics. Thus, the text became a welcome opportunity to publish, at least in provisional form, some of the essential results of my investigations. At that time, it seemed unimportant to me that the secret of the golden flower is not only a Taoist text of Chinese yoga, but also an alchemical tract. However, a subsequent deeper study of Latin tracts has corrected my outlook and shown me that the alchemical nature of the text is of prime significance. But this, to be sure, is not the place to go into more details about that point. I shall only emphasize the fact that it was the text of the Golden Flower, which is short, of course, for The Secret of the Golden Flower, that first put me in the direction of the right track.
For we have in medieval alchemy the long-sought connecting link between gnosis and the process of the collective unconscious observable to us today in modern man. I take this opportunity to point out certain misunderstandings to which even well-informed readers of this book fell victim. Not infrequently, people thought that my purpose in publishing the book was to put into the hands of the public a method of achieving happiness. In total misapprehension of all that I say in my commentary, such readers tried to imitate the method, in quotes, described in the Chinese text. Let us hope that these representatives of spiritual profundity were few in number.
Okay. I mean, we'll see what the methods are that he's talking about. Maybe that will help make what he's saying right now make sense, or make it not make sense. We'll find out later in life, reading the text. Unless he explains right now. Another misunderstanding gave rise to the opinion that in the commentary I had pictured to a certain extent my psychotherapeutic method, which it is said consisted in my suggesting to my patients Eastern ideas for therapeutic purposes. It's like not an introduction to The Secret of the Golden Flower kind of at all. It's more like, let me tell you about the Lord of the Rings. When I first saw Lord of the Rings, I was 14 years old, and I was in this relationship that it turned out was going to end after a while, but I didn't know that at the time. And by the way, I had popcorn, you know, like, okay. I mean, yeah, people are interested in Carl Jung, so they could read the introduction to this book to learn a little bit about Carl Jung. Okay, I'll just keep reading. Just poking fun a little bit. I do not believe that there is anything in my commentary lending itself to that sort of superstition. Yeah, okay. In any case, such an opinion is altogether erroneous and is based on the widespread conception that psychology is an invention for a definitive purpose and not an empirical science. To this category belongs the equally superficial as well as unintelligent opinion that the idea of collective unconscious is metaphysical. It is a question of an empirical concept, to be put alongside the concept of instinct, as is obvious to anyone who will read with some attention. Carl Jung being like, why you guys gotta say that I'm promoting Eastern practices and my psychotherapeutic practices? Why you gotta say that I'm talking about metaphysical stuff when I'm talking about intellectual unconscious? Anyway, here's a book.
I have added to this second edition the address in honor of Richard Wilhelm given to me at the memorial celebration, May 10th, 1930, in Munich. It has already been published in the first English edition of 1931.
C.G. Jung.
One more thing. Forward to the fifth German edition. To this edition, there has been added the translation of the introductory portion of another meditation text, stemming, but don't try it,
Carl Jung will laugh at you. Or he'll try to align himself with the people that are laughing at him because they think that he's... Never mind, I'm just kidding. Go ahead and try it, if you want to. I don't even know what it is yet. Maybe if it's like, first kill a rat, no, then don't try it, you know, obviously. If it's like, gaze gently up towards your third eye and squeeze your bum and go, then yeah, try it. I mean, probably it won't drive you insane. Don't try it while you're on drugs. Or do, I mean, you know, whatever. That's my advice. You could quote me on that in reputable scientific papers.
All right, where were we? Yes. The meditation text stemming from a tradition similar to that of which the Secret of the Golden Dawn Flower is part, yes, and appearing with the latter in Chinese in the Chinese edition. Richard Wilhelm wrote the following brief introduction to this meditation text in 1926. Quote, "The Hui Ming Ching, or Book of Consciousness and Life, was written by Liu Huayang in the year 1794. The author was born in the province of Jiangxi and later became a monk in the monastery of the Double Lotus Flower in the province of Anhui. The translation is from the new edition of 1,000 copies printed with the Secret of the Golden Flower in 1921 by a man with the pseudonym of Hui Chen Su, he who has become conscious of truth." The text combines Buddhist and Taoist directions for meditation. The basic view is that at birth, the two spheres of the psyche, consciousness, and the unconscious become separated. Consciousness is the element marking what is separated off, individualized, in a person, and the unconscious is the element that unites him with the cosmos. The unification of the two elements via meditation is the principle upon which the work is based. The unconscious must be inseminated by consciousness. That'd be a cool shirt. Inseminated by consciousness. Okay. Sorry. Being immersed in it. In this way, the unconscious is activated, and thus, together with an enriched consciousness, enters upon a suprapersonal mental level in the form of a spiritual rebirth. This rebirth then lends first to a progressing inner differentiation of the conscious state into autonomous thought structures. However, the conclusion of the meditation leads of necessity to the wiping out of all differences in the final integrated life, which is free of opposites. Cool. The German translation of this meditation text first appeared in the third volume of the Chinesische Blätter für Wissenschaft and Und Kunst, Darmstadt, 1926, pp. 104 through 114. The translator, being L.C. Lowe, Dr. Lowe, was at the time a collaborator of Wilhelm's and secretary of the China Institute in Frankfurt am Main. Frankfurt, new word, M-A-M, new word, capital, Main. It must be a German thing. The translation was made at the suggestion of Richard Wilhelm and was revised by him, so that in its present form it closely approximates the style of the translation of The Secret of the Golden Flower, inasmuch as the Chinesische Blätter had been brought out in a very limited edition. It seemed fitting to take this opportunity of making the text available to a wider circle of readers. Salome Wilhelm. Well, thank you, Salome. That's very nice of you. Oh, next we have a discussion of the text by Richard Wilhelm. Okay, I'm just curious to see, just so I can tell you, so we have some idea what we're expecting. So Richard Wilhelm is going to talk about the text for at least one more episode. So you can look forward to that. Frater BT will be beginning that, or maybe finishing it. If he does nothing but just read, and get all the way through it, then maybe he'll finish all that in one episode.
But if he's feeling talkative and silly, then he'll start it, and probably Gwydion will finish it in part four. So that's what you have to look forward to. And by part five, maybe by part four, we'll actually be reading The Secret of the Golden Flower, meaning the English translation of the Chinese text, rather than just all these white folk going, yeah, when I first read this, I was like, whoa, man. I mean, not like, whoa, man, like woman, but like, whoa, man, far out. Don't do it. Okay, Carl. I hope everybody's doing well. And I hope you had a joyous holiday season, whether you be a pagan celebrating the spring equinox, or Passover, Ramadan, Easter and shit, whatever it was that you did. I hope you had a good one. And do I have anything else to say? Let me ponder that one for a moment. Yeah, let's do something. I don't know what. Let's do something. I will read a few words of whatever this is. maybe not. This is Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, Writings in Time of War. Perhaps this is the book that we can read after the Divine Milieu is finished, and Divine Milieu is more than halfway finished. So, for those following the Teilhard de Chardin on Chicken Philosophy, now you know. You have a little bit of inside baseball knowledge of what we're going to read next. And, just because. Why not? Bibliomancy, right? On September 17th, again writing from Chavon-sur-l'Étang near Montreux-Vieux in Alsace, I have ancestors in that area, in the Donna-Marie district, he says that he is, quote, rather absorbed in writing and copying out, quote, operative faith, end quote. Not the most, sometimes we do bibliomancy and it's like, whoa, that really fit with the theme of today. I mean, I guess it fit with the fact that it wasn't Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, it was someone talking about Teilhard de Chardin, and today we did not read The Secret of the Golden Flower, but we're talking about The Secret of the Golden Flower.